This podcast explores the spiritual and metaphysical world through the experiences and opinions of the host and those interviewed, and therefore should not necessarily be seen as direct endorsement or personal advice to our listeners. We encourage you to use your own discretion, judgment, and intuition regarding anything you learn of through this show. You're listening to Let's Get Metaphysical. In this episode, Ren interviews Bob Holbrook about his work in healing with sound.
Our guest today is Bob Holbrook. Bob has been a student of consciousness for most of his life. Bob is an audio-supporting meditation engineer and anthropologist, having studied anthropology and archaeology at a number of different universities. Bob is an active member of the Society for the Anthropology of Consciousness, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and is a certified provider with the Institute of HeartMath. He is also a facilitator of consciousness elevating programs at the Monroe Institute and is a developer of SAM technology. Bob is gifted at engineering sounds to be used for healing and expanding consciousness, and is presently using that skill working with individuals in the areas of addiction and post-traumatic stress disorder. I met Bob about a little over a year ago. He was a facilitator of the program that I took at the Monroe Institute. This was an incredible program called the Gateway Experience. I got a lot out of that program, and I loved hearing Bob talk about how he engineers sound for use in healing in different capacities. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Please be sure to listen at the end of the episode to a sample of SAM technology. Greetings, metaphysicians. I'm here with Bob today. I'm so excited for this interview. I've been looking forward to this interview actually for almost a year now. Bob, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It's glad to be here.
Excellent. We're here in Washington, D.C. because Bob is in town today. Well, Bob, I start off my interviews the same with everyone. Do you have a metaphysical experience that you'd like to share with us today?
All right. In the past, going back quite a few years now, I was what you would best describe as a workaholic. I was, the harder you work, the better and all that. I was in a job. I hadn't had a vacation for quite a few years. I didn't dislike my job, but it was very stressful and very time consuming. And I was on a big project that had a time deadline. And to complete it, I ended up staying up and working for 72 hours straight. And that's what the project required. It wasn't because of me being, less than focused on my job. So project went off great. It was all successful. And my associates and my boss and other people came in and took one look at me and said, "You are going on a vacation."
Right.
And so I said, "Oh, what's that?" And I really hadn't been thinking much about it. So I was thinking about going to a beach somewhere and just hanging out and chill. That would be nice. I always liked the beach. And a friend said, "You should go to this place called the Monroe Institute. They have crystals there and they do meditations." And my formal education was in anthropology. So they thought I would really like this place. And it sounded kind of silly to me, but in their description, I heard that it's beautiful, it's in the Blue Ridge Mountains, you get to stay in bed all day, and they feed you. And so that sounded pretty easy. So I got there with absolutely no expectations. I hadn't read any of the books about it, the founder, Robert Monroe. I knew nothing about it. But I trusted my friend that this would be a cool place for me to go. Well, by the second day, I found it to be quite a remarkable experience, and it definitely changed my perspective on life. I slowed way down. I took much better care of myself, and my stress level within a week of being there went to maybe 10% of what it had been for a very long time.
Wow.
And I enjoyed that.
Right.
And I wanted to stay there.
Right.
I went back to work and people would walk past my office and just kind of look at me and go, "What did they do to you?" But it was noticeable and very helpful. Well, a few months after that, I did the program in August of 1994. And in January of 1995, I was in a really bad automobile accident where I was injured quite severely. And just to give you an idea, my recovery took 7 years and 21 reconstructive surgeries. So
wow.
I was in pretty bad shape when I arrived in the emergency room, and anyway, ended up in a coma for quite a while and had some other problems neurophysiologically, and spent a long time, as in months, and I couldn't tell if I was awake or asleep. I couldn't tell if it was day or night. I couldn't see right. I couldn't hear right. I had a feeding tube for meals, so I had no time sense of eating meals or whatever. I was on a morphine drip, so I would fade in and out from that. I had a respirator that breathed for me. So without being able to see, hear, eat, I kind of would go into places where I didn't know where I was. And there was like tremendous amounts of information there. Now, when I came back to awareness, I had tremendous amnesia. I couldn't remember months and months and months before the accident. I couldn't remember any numbers, like my phone number or social security, you know, numbers you should know. I couldn't remember any of them. And some of the neurological testing they did was not very nice as far as the state I was in. And the neurologist, the only thing they could tell me was, well, we don't think it'll get any worse.
Wow.
And that was scary. That was really scary. I had no grasp of what reality was, you know, of the thoughts and feelings and things that were going in my mind, the memories. So a friend brought in a boombox into my ICU room, and it had some of the Monroe Institute meta music with the audio technology on it, and they started playing that for me. And I liked it. I liked just hearing music because I could hear that, and it made me feel better. And then with the added technology, it was making me feel really better. And so now I had something to experience besides, you know, beeping machines and drugs. And so within like a day or two, I could literally feel my awareness coming back.
Wow.
You know, like almost like blocks were coming, like one of those Tetris games where things were coming back into awareness. And it was organizing around this experience. And then I started scoring better on tests. And I became much more aware of the times where I would be out of this reality, which I believe were happening when I fell asleep. And I can remember struggling to not fall asleep because falling asleep became such an intense experience of information, like lifetimes of information coming to me. And it wasn't anything I was doing, it was just happening. So then, as I got, as wellness prevailed upon me, and I was, you know, they said I would never walk again, I would never do this, I would never, and one by one, I was doing all of it. My memory came back almost completely. All the neurological deficits I had pretty much disappeared. And I was back to what you might call normal.
Wow.
And felt pretty good about that. But then I had this strange, very curious occurrence where someone would be talking to me about something and I would blurt out some kind of, you know, comment to add to the conversation or answer a question. And there was no way I could have known that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did that come from? You know, I was in a coma when all that happened. During the time, Robert Monroe, the founder of the Monroe Institute, had passed away on March 17th. And someone said to me in a conversation, well, you know, while you were in the hospital and you were in your coma, Bob Monroe passed. And I said, oh, I know, it was on St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, how could I possibly know that?
Right.
You know, so where am I getting this information? Well, it was coming to me at a different level.
Right.
And maybe things that were important to me had a place to land or you know, fit into a coherent memory system or something. Because they seemed like memories, but they were memories that I could not have collected from being present in this reality. So
right.
I'm not sure what all I got during that time, but
yeah.
I got a lot.
And you were in a hospital that whole time?
Yes.
Wow.
And then when I got to go home, I had to return for, you know, reconstructive surgeries periodically and go through all that. But I had really good doctors and healthcare providers and friends and family and other things that I came through pretty well, or at least I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you attribute your recovery to the sounds that you were hearing?
That was definitely the beginning of what I had to form a foundation of coming back to this reality, you know, where it made sense and where a lot of healing started to, you know, my natural body could now proceed the way it was designed. And my healing, you know, was much better than they had predicted or what, you know, expected, which was great for everyone. And they, you know, were able to have more to work with then, too. You know, in the basic medical practice, there was more they could do because I was healing so well.
Right.
And like I said, I had really good doctors and nurses and others that took good care of me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's my psychic experience.
Yeah, that's amazing.
One of them. Yeah.
I remember a little bit of that story from at the Monroe Institute when you were telling us that, and it's an incredible, I mean, what an experience. So what is audio supporting meditation and how does it work?
Sure. I think that sound is used in meditation or wisdom traditions or spiritual traditions, and for many, many, many thousands of years, maybe as long as people have been on the planet, there has never been a society, you know, I'm an anthropologist, they've never discovered a society on the earth today or in the past wherever that didn't have some kind of percussion or timing musical, maybe not so harmonically melodious music, but there's always a drum. There's always sticks. There's always something that keeps timing. It's something that I'm guessing we not only prefer, but maybe require.
Right.
Because it seems to always independently develop in all civilizations and cultures. So chanting, if you're a person who goes to church, you sing. There are a lot of these audio-supported, you know, spiritual type of practices for a long time. In the work I do and in the work I experienced at the Monroe Institute, we're looking at kind of, you know, a periodic rhythmic audio. It's quite simple. It can be set in very interesting different progressions that we learn about from talking to people, from measuring people with EEGs and other devices. We found that we can help people access their consciousness, the vast infinite consciousness that they are, to a much greater degree. And so you then have personal experience of who you truly are. Experience, not something you read in a book, not something someone told you, not something from some religious code or, you know, discipline, but something you have directly experienced. And so now you know what you are, who you are, and what your tremendous potential is for healing, for knowledge, for whatever it is you wish to pursue. You have a lot of resources that often go unknown, untapped, that we're not mindful of. This audio technology can help us get into that rhythm and timing that is our true self. If you look at, and the example I like to use is like the metronome that you might sit on a piano while you're learning to play the piano. It gives you that template or that focus of timing. It helps you learn and hold timing. A great symphony orchestra or whatever is controlled by a conductor, and that conductor with his timing enables many different instruments and individuals playing those instruments to be in perfect timing, in perfect pitch, in perfect alignment to produce something that none of them could do individually. So when we do those kinds of audio synchronous activities with sound, we give our body, maybe our brains, maybe our nervous system, our sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system, a whole set of ways to relax. There are many different ways to relax. And by relax, I mean fall into our natural balance and rhythm and pattern, where breathing and heart rate and all that become imbalanced as opposed to not. And when it's not, you know what that feels like, when you're tense and you take a deep breath and you let it out and, oh, you get relaxed. Well, you're balancing your system. And sometimes we have natural mechanisms for that or certain practices that will do it. But it seems like if you practice with these audio meditations for a while, you tend to stay in balance.
Right.
You develop a resilience. And that can be really profound in a lifetime, you know, to be able to not only regain balance when you notice that it's not there or when you wish to have more, But to stay balanced then, without making effort or doing certain practices or disciplines or whatever, you just maintain balance.
Right.
Because stress doesn't happen out there. It happens in here with us.
Right.
And if we don't pick it up, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And I think we forget about how much sound surrounds us all the time and affects us all the time. And
that's right.
We don't think about that maybe as an everyday experience. I remember the first time that I recognized that sound could be used in a way to help heal yourself or to help promote balance. It was a couple years ago. I was going to something called the Pathways Natural Living Expo that happens around DC a couple times a year. And I think that's actually the first time I heard of the Monroe Institute, because there was somebody there that had all of the Hemisync CDs. And I think that's when I heard about the Monroe Institute the first time. But for those of you who don't know, the Hemisync is a technology that balances both sides of your brain by listening to it through headphones. And I remember getting one of those and really enjoying it for the next couple of years. And then when I came to the Monroe Institute last year for a program, I remember learning about SAM technology, which is something that you created that involves doing a similar thing as Hemisync, except you don't have to be listening to headphones and having something coming in through either side of the head.
Right, that's correct. Actually, I didn't invent it, but I carried it forward from the time that Skip Atwater and Mike Turner were the ones who actually invented it.
Great.
What I've learned from them and from Bob Monroe and Hemisync and all the creators is that there are many things you can do with sound to help support, you know, the kinds of things that we've been talking about. For those interested in sound, Hemisync is basically something where you modulate the frequencies of sound. SAM technology is something where you modulate or change the relationship of sound, which they call the phase relationship. So you change the phase. You can change the amplitude of frequencies by making it loud and soft and loud and soft. And all of those periodic manipulations of sound are effective in a lot of different ways, and combinations of those and other combinations. The Monroe Institute has been working with sound for over 40 years and we've learned a few things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is really supportive for most people? Or how does it support? We think that there's this thing called relaxation, and I'm certainly aware that there are many ways to relax. You know, you don't have to relax and get groggy and fall asleep. You can relax and have crystal clear clarity. How good would that be when you're working on a project where you're trying to create something new and whatever, and you can get really relaxed, really focused, and, you know, just ease into that natural flow of creation, that idea of flow. Because that, when you're under pressure, the flow seems to be somewhat elusive and hard to get to. And there's times where you're just, you know, you've got it. You're in the zone or whatever they call it. Well, there are ways to support that and learn to do that and learn to be that, so that being in the zone isn't a once in a while thing that happens or something you have to go through some tremendous ritual to get to. You can take a deep breath and just be there at will. And be there effectively and in a very significant way. So we can teach different kinds or different states of consciousness or different states of relaxation and awareness.
I know you to be, you said you were trained as an anthropologist. I also was trained as an anthropologist back in the day. But how did you get from, I mean, we heard your story about the car accident, from workaholic Bob to kind of more relaxed, really happy, chill Bob. After your recovery, when did the sound engineering portion of your life and like the studies in neuroscience kind of come in to create what you're doing now, and what are you doing now?
After kind of what happened to me around this accident, which turned out to be in my life a tremendous blessing, it's not something I would have ever chosen. I wouldn't have had the courage to choose it even if I knew it was going to be beneficial. There was a lot of difficulty going through it. But what I learned, I couldn't have learned any other way. And so I'm grateful for that. After I had those experiences and understanding the influence and effect of this audio technology that I had listened to, I wanted to figure out what happened. I was really curious about that. And so I started working with sound. I started trying to understand neuroscience, because at that time, the explanation they gave made sense, but it didn't seem like it was the whole truth.
Right.
There had to be much more to it than, you know, a part of your brain is modulating sound and, you know, it's helping you relax. Well, yeah, okay, I've relaxed before and this never happened.
Right.
You know, so I really got interested because of the intense experience I had. It really sparked my curiosity. And so I started learning about sound, and I self-taught myself about sound engineering and neuroscience. I might have had a little bit of neuroscience training. I started producing things for myself to share with others, but trying, what about this? What about that? And then the technology director at the Institute, Skip Atwater, who's a good friend and was a great sound guy, he called me in one day when I was there doing a program, and he said, Bob, I understand you do some work with sound, and some of the things you've done are pretty interesting. How would you like to learn about this new SAM technology and be my assistant?
Mm.
Whoa, what an opportunity.
Wow,
I was so happy. And so Skip was a great teacher. I learned more than just the SAM technology from him,
of
but
course.
I learned that quite readily. And there's software involved and things like that. But I started being able to produce my own things. And then I started being some of the tedious work of, you know, taking a program that has, you know, audio guidance, 24, 40-minute exercises in English, and translate that to Italian and translate that to Japanese, because we want to offer these programs in other countries with providers there. So I started doing some of that work. And then about 3 months after I started this training, and I was doing pretty well with it, I found out the reason that Skip thought I would be a good assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He retired.
Okay. He wanted
so
you to take his place.
There was a bit of a trick there, yeah. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity, by the way. But it was a surprise to me. And then it was like, oh, no, I have to do everything. Oh, my gosh. But he had prepared me well. And the SAM technology was in its beginning. It had some great attributes, and it had some things that were difficult, and now it was up to me to figure that out, which was a great challenge, and I really enjoyed working with it. It's been tweaked and updated and, you know, moved this way and that way, and now that which I produce for the Monroe Institute gets called SAM, but there are a lot of different things that happen to audio support that I do beyond just SAM and HemiSync now.
Right, okay.
And so it would take a long time to talk about
sure,
all of those.
No.
But the benefit is that I have feedback from participants, smart people, spiritual people who are, you know, really open to these things, and they teach me. You know, they come there for learning, but they're teaching me to produce better and better audio support for meditation.
Amazing. Mm. So you talked a little bit about how sound and audio support was useful for you. How can this be helpful, and for whom in other cases? Do you have any stories that you want to share about how this
sure.
technology and audio support has been
yeah.
useful?
You know, when you see things on the market, especially in the new age market, there's always this new supplement or whatever, and in its first, you know, evolution, it cures everything. You know, I just love it when they have some new substance. If you eat this pill, it will do this, and it's like, man, it'll fix everything that's wrong. And then they find out, well, it doesn't do too well with this, but we think it does this. And then you find out if it may not even be useful at all. What I think about meditation, okay, I think the audio that we use supports meditation very well, especially if you're not a meditator. Okay, someone tells you meditation is good. Well, how do I do that? This will teach you in one day how to meditate. And then you can start to learn the benefit and explore that with very good support. So it's helpful that way. If you're already a meditator, there might be aspects of meditation or types of states you've never experienced. Nobody's experienced everything. And so we can support that, spreading your awareness into more expanded areas. I think it can support meditation, can support anyone with just about anything.
Mm.
And by that, I mean, if you look at any disease, illness, difficulty that people have, if you take stress out of the picture, there's a great shift that will occur. And maybe that shift is your body is now in a place where it can operate at its highest and best to heal you, to bring you back into balance. Let's put it that way. I think we get in our own ways so well, You know, and people maybe don't want to hear that, that you mean getting well is my responsibility?
Right.
Yeah, it is. We always want to go to the guy in the white coat or the wonderful, you know, light worker with the table, and they will fix me. Well, of course, they can support that. And I think that's what audio support does, too. It supports that letting go to a higherness or an otherness that gets us out of our own way and allows those things to support us. In a program not too long ago that I designed for the Monroe Institute that came from my work with using audio technology to support veterans with like PTSD, which I did on, it's not some panacea. Here, listen to this CD and all veterans will be cured of PTSD. First of all, I don't think you get cured of PTSD ever. And I don't think there's a D. I don't think it's a disorder. I think it's a very normal reaction to a very abnormal circumstance.
Hmm, yeah.
And so you can learn to accommodate it and move forward, but not forget, not cure or make it disappear. And I also think that there's great benefit that can come from that process of accommodating it, where you learn things and know things you couldn't have learned any other way, especially about human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So in this program I designed for the for TMI, using what I learned working with veterans and working with people with the PTSD and working with people with addiction, there's actually a lot of similarities in PTSD and addiction as far as how you might mediate that, moderate it, help healing occur. And so I made a Monroe version for just general well-being. I like to invite, and we often give a scholarship to veterans to come to that program and not come as an ex-Marine or a, you know, combat veteran, PTSD guy or gal, but to come as who you are, your name. We're just going to call you by your name, and you're not veteran person.
Right.
You know, you get to just participate. Well, in this last program, we had a veteran come who was in Vietnam. Great guy. He'd been suffering from PTSD since the 1960s. And he gave me permission to talk about this. I won't use his name, but
sure.
He was on 14 different medications for his, you know, difficulties. And he explained to me, I'm on 3 medications for sleep. One helps me fall asleep. One helps me stay asleep, and one helps me forget the terrors that I dreamed about all night. And I was like, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, it'd be nice if you could get off of those meds. Yeah, I'd like to. So we came to the Institute to do this program, and in the Institute, we sleep in little kind of, well, we call them check units. You know what they are. But they're kind of like very comfortable, cozy little cutouts in the wall. So you're like sleeping inside a little chamber that allows for quietness and no light to come in, so that during the day when we do our meditations, we have a very peaceful, quiet, dark place to do that while we lay down. We also sleep there during the night, where we are supported with sleep sounds to help us get full sleep cycles and very restorative sleep. Well, they showed him to his check unit, and he just took one look at it and said, I'll be sleeping on the floor.
Right.
I'm not going in there. You know, claustrophobia, whatever. That was not a safe place for him to sleep. So he slept on the floor. He would go in there to do his exercises during the day, but there was no way he was going to spend the night in there. Okay, fine. Not a problem. But it was the third morning, he came down, and he was all smiles, and he said, I have an announcement. What's that? He said, well, last night I decided I would give sleeping in the check unit, in the little cubicle, a try and listen to the sleep sounds. And so I did. And he said, last night is the first night that I have slept through the entire night since 1968.
Wow.
He goes, I'm getting off some of my meds.
Yeah.
This is great. You know, in one night, decades of difficulty disappeared for this guy. And I'm not saying it's that miraculous for everyone,
right,
or whatever, but I see those types of amazing perspective shifts and physical shifts and living, you know, daily living shifts happen just within a week or within a day or within an hour, because it's such a natural thing that we're trying to get to. It's not some high achievement to get a good night's sleep. Most people in the United States do not sleep well.
Right.
And when we use the sleep signals at night, first of all, you're going to get that restorative sleep, which is hugely important. If you don't get into deep delta restorative sleep every night, which many people don't, or they don't do it for very long, your brain cannot detoxify itself, and it builds up toxins. There's a whole new kind of study, and they've coined the term your glymphatic system. And what happens is all the cells in your body are cleansed by the lymph system, except your brain.
Okay.
So how does the brain clean itself? Those are cells. How do they get clean? Well, when you go into deep delta, because your brain isn't doing a whole lot, there are glial cells, a kind of cell in your brain called glial cells, which shrink. And when they shrink, it creates fissures and openings and spaces in your brain where cerebrospinal fluid can go in. And it picks up all the fractured proteins and things of use, the waste materials. And when you wake up and those cells swell back up, it pushes it all through your cranial sacral, and it's absorbed by your body then. And what's really interesting, and this is kind of a bold thing to say, but it rings true to me, and that is one of the main fractured proteins that are being removed with good deep delta sleep are called beta amyloid proteins. And those are the proteins that are responsible for the formation of the plaques that cause Alzheimer's disease.
Wow.
So it might be the case that Alzheimer's disease is just a long-term, lifelong sleep disorder where right. you're not getting that deep delta sleep and you're not cleaning your brain. You know, when you stay up all night, you know, remember when you were in school and you pulled the all-nighter and you tried to survive the next day and you felt horrible. You couldn't do anything right.
Right.
You just wanted to go to sleep. It's because of that. Your brain is not optimal. It's right. got all this junk flying around in there that we need to get rid of. And so, again, when you're under stress, then there's even more of the toxins that need to come out.
Right.
And so, and when you're in stress, you don't sleep deeply and well. So we have these audio supports that are very gentle, and it's interesting, all the dynamics that go into it. But those can help you and train to get initial deep delta sleep. And then there's other parts, REM sleep and sleep cycles, and there's other things that are very healthy. And what I've been able to do with that as well is to institute certain signals towards the end of sleep. In other words, we want to wake up at 7. Instead of an alarm clock ripping you out of somewhere where
right.
you were processing consciousness where you needed to be, and then you wake up, and their first thought is, I don't want to go. You know, now we wake up, and all of a sudden you just simply open your eyes, you're awake, you're well-rested, you're detoxified, you're ready to go for the day at 7 o'clock. Because the signals were progressing into a normal wake up at the time you want. What a great alarm clock to go through sleep naturally instead of, you know. 5 years ago, I retired from that job that I told you about.
Right.
And I had no schedule, which is kind of strange at first. It was real fun at first. I could sleep in, you know. Mm-hmm. But I started to, I'm focused on a lot of work. It's not like I retired from working and doing things I like. But now, when I'm tired, I go to sleep. When I'm not tired, I wake up. When I'm hungry, I eat. I don't eat because it's 12 o'clock noon. I eat because I'm hungry. And I start listening more to my body and living in that mindfulness to a greater degree, and now to a much greater degree. You know, suddenly I'm really mindful of my diet, you know, and I realized I wasn't doing such a good job there.
Right.
And, wow, what an increase in energy and health and all that I got from that. That mindfulness internally to me and who I am and all that, instead of always being focused externally, was helpful, really helpful. And I think that's what happens when we do the meditation and the audio-supported meditation, is that we turn to that internal mindfulness that we came in with. We turn to that internal intuition that we came in with. I can remember to this day going into the structure of education in our American society. First thing that I still remember it, I was left-handed when I was born. I was whacked on my left hand until I became, you know, I learned to do everything right-handed.
Oh man, I'm glad I missed those times because yeah. I am left-handed.
Yeah, right. Well, it's a right-handed world. You
right.
better, they were trying to do me
sure,
a favor.
Sure, they thought they were doing a good
and,
thing.
But, you know, it was so much more comfortable. You know, any homework at home, left-handed. So for a long time, I was very ambidextrous. I could do either, quite well. Then I just sort of, now I would have to say I'm right-handed, but I can, you know, I learned sign language, you know, the letter spelling, and I can do it with both hands at the same time because it's a new thing
right.
that I learned, and it's still, that left-handedness is still in there. I also I can remember being, oh, stop that, that's just your imagination. You know, where imagination was something that had to be, you know, limited.
And less so
that,
than.
Right, and less than and not real, so that you could, well, there goes your chance to be an artist. There goes your chance to,
right.
you know, have
create.
Contact with information in your environment. And then that's, in my opinion, that type of, which I don't think is bad. I understand why that happens. I wish it didn't, but I understand why that happened, especially in the era where I grew up. But, you know, then it's about remembering who you truly are, remembering that imagination. You know, kids, children who have imaginary friends, what's that all about? Who or what, it, well, that's their, you know, intention. That's their ability to experience information beyond the five physical senses.
Right.
And so when you remember that and you gain it back, you start to realize that maybe these aren't the sixth sense. I believe this kind of awareness is our first sense. I think it's the sense, if you, and I've, like I say, I've worked with military veterans. If you ask any military veteran that's been, they're into all kinds of things about good luck and don't do this and rituals and because they realize the value of that first sense. It will keep you alive in mm-hmm. a very difficult situation. And indeed it does. And you begin to rely on it. I think a lot of, many of the psychics I know had difficult times as children where that sixth sense became necessary. You needed to know when your father was coming home because if you didn't hide, you were going to get beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Survival
mechanism kind of stuff. I know several people who you would call psychics or have really good ability that way, and they had difficult childhoods.
Right.
And because they never lost the innate ability we came in with.
How are you working with the audio-supported meditation or using sound engineering right now to support health and wellness?
Mm-hmm. At the Monroe Institute, what we do there is not therapy. It's a mindful practice that we're just working with general well-being so that what we have is available to everyone. We're not there to fix you. We don't think you're broken in the first place. We're just there to help you realize who you truly are and the more of you, the aspects of you that are available. And then we don't tell you how to do that or what is most important or whatever. We're just helping you find that expanded awareness and that illumination. And then what you see and what you do with it is it's different for everyone, really. And it's for your own benefit and in your own way. And Bob and Roe would say, now, you know, here's the light. Go find out for yourself. You know, we're not going to tell you how to be or, you know, what is the right way or the wrong way. And so we have that going. I do work with different projects outside of the Institute to try to promote, you know, more therapeutic applications, like I said, with PTSD, especially with veterans. I think they're underserved. They've dedicated and given a lot, and I don't think they've, you know, gotten enough in return. And that really troubles me. And I think I have something that's very effective that could help many of them, and I really want to get that to them somehow. And so I'm working on that.
Absolutely.
Addiction, a huge problem in our country. There's over 80,000 formal addiction clinics in the United States, and their success rate, you know, those who stay sober or free of drugs for 5 years or more is less than 18%. And there's a lot of people that go in there. I mean, if you had a business and you were only successful less than 18% of the time, you'd go out of business, you know?
Right, absolutely.
There's people who work very hard at this. And anyway, when I worked in an addiction clinic, we were able to see some really positive results of the meditation and audio-based meditation and helping people, those who were the ones, you know, the traits and the learning and the experience that helped people become non-addictive. We saw a great rise in those. And so I think it's an important aspect of recovery or accommodating that difficulty, which is huge in the U.S. and it's growing rapidly, especially among younger generations.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. This is just a fascinating topic to me because, you know, you can press a button and change the feeling of a room, change the way that your mind is operating, and get to these deeper issues that you're talking about, PTSD and addictions and, mm-hmm. and other things. And I think that it is something that could be used far more often with more frequency in this country and all over the world than it currently is. So I'm thrilled that there are people like you out there doing this work and creating beautiful things that we can press play to and change our lives. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Bob, how can people find out more about you if they wish to?
The best way would probably be to search the Monroe Institute website. They have some materials on there about the work that I do, the programs, the audio technology. That's a really good place to begin. And their website is monroeinstitute.org. It's real easy. A lot of stuff on there you can search. And I believe if you're diligent, you'll find ways to connect with me, and I would welcome anybody that wants to ask questions or find out more. That's fine.
Excellent. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for joining us, Bob.
My pleasure.
Here is an example of SAM technology that was developed in part by Bob Hallbrook. It was delightful to be able to talk to Bob here in Washington, D.C. I am fascinated by the things that we talked about. I think that sound has an incredible capability to be used for healing in more capacities than it has currently been used. And I'm grateful to Bob for sharing his expertise on this topic.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. To find out more about Bob's work and the Monroe Institute, visit www.monroeinstitute.org. If you like the show and want to help us keep doing what we do, please consider checking out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/letsgetmeta and become a patron today. Let's Get Metaphysical is a production of the HANA Healing Arts Network. The show's host is Renata Maniacci. Audio editing by Zoe Ravenwood. The voice of the credits is me, Aries. Thanks for listening.